You're listening to The Silva Lining, brought to you by the Silva Feria Funeral Home.
And welcome to this week's episode of The Silva Lining. I'm your host, Amy Silva Rigtrup, funeral director at Silva Feria Funeral Homes with locations in Fall River and also in Somerset. And I'd like to remind you all that every Tuesday I am in our Somerset location with office hours from 1 to 3 p.m., which is at 84 County Street in Somerset. And now that the Continent Bakery is back open in Swansea, Massachusetts, I will have with me some wonderful treats from the Continent Bakery. So that is another enticing reason to come and join me so I don't eat all of them myself. Today's guest I am honored to have with me and will have with me not only today but also next week and the week after that. So there will be plenty of time, and he has also told me that he will answer any question that anybody has for him. So anyone that would like to join today's conversation can call in at 508-673-1480. And before I fully introduce him, I want everyone to know that I've spent probably 20 hours, I'd say, on the phone with this man, and not only is he amazing to talk to in general, but what strikes me the most is I've met a lot of people in my life, and I think when you meet people in any profession, there's a couple categories, and I usually meet people that have knowledge, some people have progressive thinking, and some people have, like, a unique progressive, like, perspective on things. And this man has all three. And I find that as a very unique quality in a person, especially a person that has such a long history in an industry such as the funeral business that is stereotypically seen as stagnant and morbid and very slow to change. This man, beyond what he probably right now is famous for, is also an advocate for this industry. He's an advocate for the people and the families that he serves. He's an advocate for the people that are poor, that don't have a lot of funds. He's an advocate for the industry itself in terms of how our industry is run, the regulations that run our industry. He's an advocate for education and helping people get into our industry. And that really strikes a chord with me because my mission for doing this show and for talking about everything involved with our industry is to give our industry a voice. And in meeting this man, I've realized that for decades, he's been a voice in so many levels for our industry and for the families and the public that we serve. So getting to what he's well known for right now is back a couple years ago. I know everyone here and across the nation remembers what happened when the Boston Marathon bomb took place. It was a horrible, horrible, scary day. And this man, Peter Steffen, who is my guest today, is the owner at Graham Putnam and Mahoney Funeral Home in Worcester. And he is the funeral director that ended up handling the remains of Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who is the deceased suspected marathon bomber, the brother of the convicted marathon bomber, Jokhar Tsarnaev. So, Peter Steffen, thank you so much for joining me. Are you there? Can I hear you?
Absolutely. I've been listening to, and I feel very good after all the comments.
Hey, that's what it's intended for. Since you're not here in the studio with me, I can't, you know, shake your hand. And it looks like we already have a caller, Peter. So, caller, sure. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi. How are you today?
Not bad. Keep it clean, keep it legal.
Keep it clean and keep it legal. Or you can get strange and weird. That's what we're here for, too.
Oh, God. I just tuned in the tail end. Were you talking about Bernie Sanders?
No, I'm talking about Peter Steffen.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not big enough to get Bernie Sanders yet. We'll see what happens in a year or so.
And what was I going to ask you? What does he do?
He is a funeral director. He runs a funeral home in Worcester called Graham, Putnam, and Mahoney.
Oh, okay.
And he's ran the funeral home, I think, since the 70s. And what happened was after the Boston Marathon bomber suspect that was killed in pursuit, his name was Tamerlan, when he passed away, there was a lot of controversy around who would handle his body and his remains.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yes, and he is the funeral director that handled his remains. I believe he's the second funeral home.
Wasn't he called Speed Bump?
I don't remember the term speed bump being involved, but I know it was like a 2.5 week process to even find a cemetery that would accept Tamerlan's body. So Peter, if you want to speak a little bit to what you went through, the caller was asking, do you remember a term called speed bump, or was that the other funeral home that was given that coin?
I never used that term, speed bump, at all. It might have been attributed to them, but I never heard it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I didn't hear that either. I think the first funeral home was in Attleboro, right?
Yeah, what happened there was this funeral basically had been arranged for through the uncle, and I was trying to keep it quiet for a while, but I think it came about that some family member had called someone down there, and they called them the funeral home because the press was sort of pushing them along. And, of course, they went up there with their nameplates on the hearse and everybody else, and every reporter was waiting for them.
Wow.
So when they got to Attleboro, it was a near riot. So that's when I then eventually went and picked up his remains and brought them here.
Yeah, to keep it a little more, discreet.
Well, what happened in the TV people waiting for me, because somebody told them down there that we were picking them up when I got here, that there was no place to hide. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't have lied about it because it wouldn't have made any sense.
Yeah.
That's not what we do in this business. The one thing we do, all of us, for the most part, we don't tell any lies. We're dealing with too sensitive a subject. And probably some of the most honorary people in any business are in this business.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of the same. The paradox I see in speaking with you about your situation, and I remember at the time hearing about what was happening, the paradox that I saw was at the same time that I'm hearing about all the death threats and all the criticism that you got, was I was hearing no death threats or criticism about the doctors and the nurses that were keeping the brother, Jokar, alive in the hospital while he was waiting to go to prison.
And the perpetrator himself had to be treated, and they treated him.
Yeah, but it's all understood societally that doctors take a Hippocratic oath. And
so don't we.
So do we. And every person that passes away needs to be dealt with.
Right.
And everybody that is harmed or injured needs to be helped, whether they have harmed somebody else or they're guilty of a crime. It's the same thing. And like you said when we were on the phone, it's a matter of human decency.
Right. And it's not that you're doing it for the perpetrator. You basically do it for yourself, because it's a matter of respect. And as we say in our business, we can't separate the sins from the sinners.
No.
And we don't.
That is very true.
We probably take a lot of heat sometimes for the things we do, but people don't realize how much we actually do.
I like what was said in the article that the Worcester newspaper wrote about you when you're a person of the year.
Oh, the Worcester Magazine.
Yeah, they said they made a nice, there was a nice quote in there saying, I think where this is the first terrorist killed on American soil, it means we didn't act like they would do.
No, we didn't drag bodies through the streets.
Exactly.
And we don't do that. And as I told the government, who was totally silent, by the way, that if you want to put people in dumpsters, as they recommend, then go ahead, pass the law, and maybe somebody will do it. It'll never be me. And nobody in this funeral business that we have in this country will do it either.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And regardless of what a person has done, I mean, not that I personally can say that I've handled the remains of a terrorist on that level. I mean, but I've handled funerals of somebody that's harmed somebody else. And what people don't think of in the broader perspective is that regardless of what a person has done, they still are leaving a grieving family. And
right.
Nobody ever wants to know the type of grief of loving someone or, God forbid, being a parent of someone that goes on to harm another person, kill another person, hurt another person, and then lose that child or family member. That is a level of grief that nobody ever wants to go through.
I can remember when I came through the AIDS epidemic, I basically was the only one who was taking the people and actually having viewing for them.
Oh, back in the 80s.
Fear created by that.
Mm-hmm.
And many times I would call people, because I have done some work with a shelter, a wet shelter, and I'd have to call somebody and say that so-and-so had passed away, and they'd say, well, it's a good thing, it's about time or something. Not meaning it the way it sounded, but I guess so much time had gone by where they'd gone through so much things that it just seemed like it was a peaceful end.
Yeah. There was a lot of suffering. Well, back then, too, there was so much that wasn't known about AIDS.
Well, and again, the government caused the social workers who were trying their best actually created the problem because they turned it into, in the eyes of the public, a gay and social disease, which mm-hmm. held up the funding, number one. I can recall going some places and buying coffee and donuts for the guys here, and they'd handle my change with a napkin and wash the money.
Wow, really?
Absolutely.
Like you were somehow infested.
Right, infected or whatever. And they used to wash the money, and then they'd do it. If I came in and handled the doorknob, somebody would walk over and spray it.
Oh, what
but
an
again,
insult.
It was sad because it was just another disease, no different than when people would have a sign in the house saying, someone in this house lives here with tuberculosis. Be careful.
Yeah, like a quarantine.
Right. And the AIDS has been around for years. Years ago, it was called Kaposi sarcoma. It's been around for years, and people didn't know about it. But you didn't have to turn around and just avoid everybody.
Yeah.
Because the AIDS virus outside of the body dies after anywhere from 12 to 15 hours. There's no regeneration of it. And a lot of people thought it went on and on. I'd have Christmas parties with a lot of AIDS children that I sponsored, and I wouldn't let them take any pictures because if the pictures appeared in the paper, families would say, well, my kids go to school with those kids.
Oh, right.
Absolutely. And it caused a lot of problems, and of course the funding was raised. And not only that, but the Center for Disease Control, whom I call the Center for Denial and Confusion, knew about this disease. The Louis Pasteur Institute knew about this disease and did nothing about it. They denied it for years. The hemophiliacs came down with AIDS because nobody told the Red Cross had blood that nobody knew was infected.
Yeah.
That's where that came. The movie and the band played on, which I had something to do with, and they presented it. And all of a sudden, the Louis Pasteur Institute and the Center for Disease Control come out and say, we have a new announcement. We've discovered a new virus. My call to them was, where have you been hiding? And even today, they refuse to put it on a death certificate. They put down multi-system organ failure. They were protecting the rights of who?
Totally. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, a deceased individual has no rights. That's why we have estates that are probated. And these days, if you want to find the information out, everything's a big secret. But they say 6 or 7 million people died of this disease. It's probably more like 20 million.
Yeah.
Because I had a lengthy dispute here with some of the people, and I said it should be put down on the death certificate. Not only is it allowed, it's required. And up until a few years ago, it wasn't put down, so the government had absolutely no statistics to see how bad it really was.
That's an interesting
so
thing.
So they can blame themselves. They
yeah.
caused themselves. There was no need for the San Francisco bathhouse riots. They wouldn't tell some of the gay people what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a gay disease. Not really, but they blamed the
yeah,
gay people.
It was
people.
The blood.
So the government right,
it's a
so
blood
the government complained.
Transfusion disease
yeah,
with tattoos and
yeah,
sharing needles and drug
sexual
use.
Sexual contact
to totally.
Some degree, but you know what? The government
education is the point of everything.
But
we're going to come back. We're come to our first break, Peter, so we're going to come back with you after the break. And we're gonna,
sure.
We have like a million things that we can talk about, so I hope everyone joins us after the break.
Sure.
Thank you so much, everyone that's listening. It's a little bit funny,
this feeling inside. You're listening to The Silver Lining, brought to you by the Silva Feria Funeral Home.
Don't have much money, but boy, hi, and welcome back to The Silva Lining. I'm your host, Amy Silva Rigtrup, Funeral Director at Silva Faria Funeral Homes. with locations in Fall River and in Somerset. And just like with every show that we do every week, I summarize my shows with any references on our blog, which is www.thesilva.org. I'll definitely be posting about today's show and referencing the article I was just talking about, which appeared in the Worcester, I believe, Telegraph. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me, but it's all about Peter Stefan, and it highlights pretty much all the accomplishments and all of the things that he advocates for and his whole history and everything that he went through when he handled the remains of the suspected Boston Marathon bomber, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, back in what year was that? Was that 2012?
2013.
It feels like yesterday. I remember directing a funeral that morning, and we're in Fall River, so we're right near UMass Dartmouth, and there was just so much drama that morning.
Oh, yeah. The interesting part about this, though, that I can bring up to you, is that there was a consideration of burying him in a cemetery in Massachusetts.
Really?
And some of the cemeteries said they would refuse him burial. Now, that really didn't have to be the fact, because cemeteries primarily are nonprofit corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there, either owned by a municipality or a private corporation that runs a cemetery. And if you wanted to buy a lot there, you should be able to buy it. And them turning you down was totally against the law.
Yeah, is there anything in the law that allows them to turn someone
not
away?
Not on the basis of what the cause of death was or if somebody committed a crime. Now, a Catholic cemetery might say, well, this person was a criminal, was a murderer. Well, I would think a murderer would certainly need a funeral mass or whatever you could do. Graveside service, many instances you'll read where a gangster will pass away and they'll say, we won't give you church mass, but we'll give you a graveside service.
Yeah.
Because they owned a lot in the Catholic cemetery, and they cannot deny them burial there because they owned a lot.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the bylaws that says if you rob a bank and get shot, you can't be buried here.
Totally.
At all. And the thing was...
And technically, he never was able to be convicted.
No. And assuming that you can assume that it was him, but it didn't matter even being convicted. No cemetery, if you wanted to buy a lot there, could turn you down. If it's a non-profit corporation, public or private, municipal or otherwise. They're in the business of selling graves to the public, and you can't discriminate. And I had many people offer to donate a grave.
Really?
And if a person wanted to donate a grave, say you have a cemetery down where you are, wanted to donate a grave and signed it over to us to bury the Marathon bomber, that cemetery would have to accept them. But all the cemeteries, for the most part, said they wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And cemeteries can't function that way. If you own a lot, or you're an heir, or someone gives you a lot, they cannot turn you away for burial. Cannot be done, whether it's municipal, religious, archdiocesan, or anything else.
Well, that's interesting, and that's definitely a topic I want to expand on a little later. But I want to keep along this timeline, and I don't know if you've ever been interviewed publicly by a fellow funeral director before, but as a funeral director, interviewing a funeral director that went through something like this, I want to make sure that all my listeners know that I know that you didn't accept a dime for this entire situation.
No, in fact, what I did with the money, and anyone who's contributed, I run a prescription drug fund for poor people here.
Really?
So I use the money to help them make their co-payments or buy their medicine. In fact, at the immediate moment, I have a bill that I'm getting ready to file that would recycle prescription medications in Massachusetts and stop throwing them away.
That's interesting. Like in nursing homes and medical facilities, or that people could recycle their own?
No, we recycle them to a certain to these free health clinics to do it. I myself collect many times people will donate diabetic test strips, which don't require a prescription to speak of, more or less. You get
right.
them. But I give anything I find. I get wheelchairs here, crutches, whatever. A lot of funeral directors do something. They donate different things. But the pills, we can't donate or give them away. But In fact, it would probably save the state $12 to $15 million because there are about 23 other states in the U.S. to do it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's what I did with the money. Any contributions I got, the money that the uncle gave me, I put it into that prescription drug fund for poor people. And that's what I use it for.
So it was his uncle that helped out, because I remember hearing on the news that wasn't he married and his wife kind of didn't want to take any part of it.
No, well, actually what it was, his brother was the father of these two kids.
Oh.
So the mother's his sister-in-law. And there are two sisters in New Jersey that still live there. The mother and the parents are in Chechnya, and the uncle lives in Maryland. So, but when it came to it, as I said, I didn't accept a dime, and someone said to me, well, you know, he could collect welfare. I said, I wouldn't take a nickel from anybody for this, because the first thing they say is the funeral director's in it for the money, and there's many things that funeral directors do that the public doesn't know about that we don't make any money on.
Mm-hmm.
We do it for free. And many times I've said funeral directors should be commended for what we do and not criticized.
Well, I commend you for everything that you did. And I know that you got a lot of criticism, but I love reading that you did get some support as well.
Yeah. The only ones who didn't support us, and to some degree the government didn't, number one, they disappeared.
Well, that's kind of not surprising.
But another one that disappointed me was the religious community in the entire world, because I did contact a few people, Vatican included and some others, and asked them to come out and say that Christians bury the dead. It would have taken some of the heat off and created some support.
Yeah.
But nothing was ever said. Nothing was ever commented on about that.
Well, I remember you telling me you were reached out to by one politician.
Yes, one or two that were here. My state senator come up. My congressman was pretty good, and the secretary of state, who I know, he tried to back us up wherever he could, too. But the thing was, it should have been something that the nation, we've buried the spies. The traitors have gotten funerals.
Mm-hmm.
Spies have gotten funerals. This is the first time in American history we refused to bury anybody. And it was sad, because I think Gladstone, the former English prime minister, said, show me a manner in which the nation buries its dead, and I'll show you the stature or the feelings or the sympathy of the community. I forget the sermon. I've said it 1,000 times. I forgot.
That's okay.
Show me how a community honors its dead and so forth and how it's buried.
Well, it comes down to respect and dignity,
right.
And that's how it should be.
And funeral directors, as I say, people don't realize that we get calls from the strangest places, the strangest times, and they seem to forget who buries the poor people, because there's more poor people than people with assets that can afford funerals.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often said, God must have loved the poor because he made so many of them and keeps making more.
That's a quote right there.
Okay? And again, not to blow our own horn, but we're a very important part of society. We take care of things at the worst time that people go through.
And everybody goes through it.
Right.
Well, with that sentiment, I think we should continue on this talk. We already came to another break, so we're going to be back with Peter Steffen. Continue listening to us on The Silver Lining.
You're listening to The Silver Lining, brought to you by the Silver Feria Funeral Home.
All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
Welcome back to The Silver Lining. I'm your host, Amy Silva Rigtrup, funeral director at Silva Faria Funeral Homes. And if anybody wants to call in and join the conversation, the number is 508-673-1480. My guest today is Peter Steffen, owner at Graham Putnam and Mahoney Funeral Home in Worcester, and the funeral director that handled the remains of the deceased suspected Boston Marathon bomber Tamerlan Tsarnaev, and he is willing to answer any question. There is no question he cannot answer, and I can definitely attest to that after all the time I've spent talking to him. He's quite amazing to talk with. So we're going to continue our conversation. And we had talked a little bit on the last segment about being a funeral director and how there's a lot that we do that the public doesn't realize. And a lot of that involves the fact that we kind of pull a lot of things together and we end up making a lot of plans and making a lot of things happen and have a lot of skills that we don't get to really prepare for, and nothing really can prepare us for the situations we end up in. And I'm sure, Peter, you can attest to that with this situation around handling Tamerlan's remains. So you were able to, after probably, what, a week, find a cemetery that was willing to accept his remains, and then you were dealt with probably a severely hard situation.
Well,
of how to get his body off of your property.
Here's what the plan was. And we had talked to the Russians and so forth. And my plan was to get him to Chechnya.
Oh.
Now, we had it set up fairly well, because the Chechenian government wasn't too happy with things. But we felt he should be buried there. But the problem here was that I could get his remains to Moscow. But if nothing was planned after that, the world press would have criticized us to no end, because some of the other countries would have said, they just dropped his body off here and left him. Shows you how much class the USA has.
Right.
So that wasn't going to happen. So I did talk to some people, well-known influential people over there in government, and I said, I can get his body to Moscow, but I do know that Aeroflot Airlines, which is the equivalent to our American Airlines or larger airlines, and the Russian military wouldn't fly him, but I had made arrangements to have him moved by truck from Moscow to Chechnya, 25-hour ride.
Oof.
And I'm sure it wasn't like Route 24.
No.
Probably. And that could have been arranged, but I needed someone in the government over there to come out in the world press and say that we will guarantee that his body will get to Chechnya so that the USA didn't look like we just dumped him there. So
that, not an easy task.
No, but it could have been done, but unfortunately I didn't have the governmental support. I had police details here for like 6, 7, 8 days. And although the government was pushing to get him out, get him out, get him out, they didn't realize what we go through to do some of these things.
Yeah. I remember hearing you had protesters constantly. You had to have security around the clock.
Well, the protesters, I bought them coffee, donuts, and pizza. They really enjoyed themselves.
Oh.
So.
Well, that's good.
And the thing was, what I said to them was that his body was actually moved by family members in a van and was brought down to Virginia.
Oh.
And it was cleared. We cleared it through the authorities and so forth in certain locations. And nobody actually saw us move him out of the building.
How'd you pull that off?
Well, we had 2 and 3 in vehicles going in and out. We had about 5 TV trucks, probably 100 reporters. And it got to the point they didn't know what hearse was carrying who. Even I lost track for a few minutes.
Oh, so it was like a decoy situation.
Yeah, it was a big... And we had helicopters. We sent cars west, north, south, east. And we had helicopters and trucks following us everywhere, but nobody knew, so we used a different vehicle, somebody else driving it, to get down to Virginia. So nobody saw it.
As you're telling me this, I can hear, like, background music and visualize it, like an Ocean's 11 kind of montage.
Right.
Of, like, their bank robbery, you know, plan coming together. I cannot imagine how you were able to put this all together.
And the interesting part, which you'll get the biggest charge out of, is that when you file a death certificate, you know, to get a burial permit,
yeah,
you will get the burial permit. If you don't have the complete information for the death certificate, you can always call it in.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did with Boston was that I held back the social security number and the date of birth, got the burial permit. Thereby, the certificate was not sent to City Hall to be certified where all the press was waiting. So I bought myself an extra day.
Brilliant.
So I needed it. To get out.
To get out. You're amazing.
So,
I'm like,
but that's,
bowing.
That's the way it was done in different ways and a couple of other things. But as I say, in other cases that we handle, funeral directors handle so many different nationalities now that are coming in, so many different customs that we have. And the one thing the funeral director can't do is make one mistake. Every mistake is...
Well, it's highlighted. It's like times 50.
Well, it's astronomical.
Yeah.
In the eyes of the public, oh, this is the worst mistake ever. Even the smallest, you miss one thing in an obituary, you miss this, you miss that. So we're not expected to miss anything.
I always compare it to the restaurant business. You know, like in the restaurant business, you bring out a plate and they take a bite of their steak and they're satisfied if you'll just, you know, give me another steak.
Right.
You know, and I'll be happy. But with the funeral home, like you have a rip in your carpet and the limo gets to your house 10 minutes late.
Right.
They want a refund on, you know, the entire funeral. But it's understandable because it's not just like going out to eat kind of customer situation.
No.
This is like a heightened, emotional, stressful time for everybody. But it's also on our end and on the entire end, like planning a wedding pretty much in 2 days. The amount of details and things that have to coincide and things that could go wrong within a window of 2 or 3 days.
And then the people will change their minds and they'll give you the wrong information, which you'll file and have to correct it. But there's one big improvement coming in this funeral industry.
Oh, yeah?
We have more women coming into it, and the women are more sensitive to it, more detail-minded, and mostly deal with other women. And the women, basically, are the salvation of the funeral service industry.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
Well, it's true, because 80% of the new students coming in, and I have the opportunity to train some of them, are young ladies. And they present a much better image than we do. We tend to think it's sometimes all business and lose our sense of sensitivity because we do it all the time. But the women don't. And dealing with another woman, I see a lot of women come in and talk to some of the students I have, and it's like saying, gee, I have a daughter or a granddaughter your age.
Mm.
A whole new set of conversation starts. And when some of these people call the following day, they don't ask for me, they ask for the girls.
Right.
And it's true. The girls, although it's some of the funeral directors are male, who don't accept it, the girls are the Salvation Army funeral service in this country.
I'm so happy that you just said that. I think we're pretty awesome, too.
Well, I mean, just take a look.
It's a hard transition, though.
Well, yes, but take a look at what you do. You raise children, take care of a house, you do all these things. And we're limited, based a lot of times. We do a job and come home. But a woman does a job, comes home, takes care of kids, and does all the other things, too, from laundry to cooking and you name it. And we're just not equipped to handle that.
Well, I think, too, to that, because I have to say, for me, like, thank my good Lord Jesus Christ, I married a man that can do the laundry and cook and clean and help take care of my kids.
We can all do it, but
you know,
not as good
like
as you can.
I'm supported a lot, so I kind of have a male kind of life a little bit. But I think as a woman, I think it's easier for me to allow the families I serve that comfortable vibe or feeling to be able to open up in ways that maybe the presence of a man might not
be
open to a certain type of conversation. I find myself in a counseling situation a lot more. I find myself able to talk about, you know, personalizing things in different ways than I think other people in my firm might. You know, I think there's just a different way. There's just a different way, like you said, that women are able to converse than men.
Well, yes, because you're a mother also, and you're talking to someone who may have lost somebody that's also a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, men can do all the things you're talking about, but nowhere near as well as women for the most part.
I can agree. I mean, some men are more awkward than others, but I've also seen some men that are very in touch with that counseling side as well. And I think it's going to work on both sides of the sexes. Like I think that the impact that women are having on our industry is going to also hold up a mirror and open up the floodgates to allow men to be more comfortable in taking that role as well. Because
if there's any room left for us.
If there is, and there is going to be. But I think beyond the role of the sexes, I think beyond it being like a male or female thing, I think our industry as a history beyond just being a man, was more of a quiet and seen as morbid figure, because that's what society wanted back in the turn of the century.
Well,
we were supposed to be...
They'll never call you Digger Odell, but they call us that.
Totally, but that's what society wanted. They wanted that strong, suited figure that just handled everything. You know what I mean? Like, that was the comfort. And that's what people wanted then. And that's what, and our industry, I think, forever is going to become whatever society needs. And I think we're in an age right now where society is changing in what it needs. And we're just going to keep adapting to what society needs. But the beauty of right now is we're able to now open society's minds to learning more about what they need. And I think that's where women are making an impact, because we're starting to be a voice.
When people call funeral home you work for, I'll bet they ask more times for you than anybody else.
Oh, they might. They might. They might. They might not remember my name, though. They'll be like, I want to talk to that lady.
That's okay. But I, as I said, I see it. And also, women are creating more of a value in the eyes of people with funeral services. We're getting to the point now that we have the term direct cremation, direct disposition. And when dealing with the women, they're presenting a different idea that funeral services have some value. There's value to them.
Yeah.
Not a money issue.
I can definitely speak to that. I have a different way of talking about that than than most people. Yeah. And I think we can get back to that into the after the break. And I want to talk more about your ideas for education.
Sure.
Because I think they're brilliant. So we're going to go to a break and we'll be back with Peter Steffen. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to The Silver Lining, brought to you by the Silva Feria Funeral Home.
And so, become yourself.
Hi, and welcome back to The Silva Lining. I'm your host, Amy Silva Rigtrup. I just want to thank my wonderful sponsors this week. I am sponsored by Fine Mortuary College, my alma mater, and my awesome school that I graduated from, Forethought Life Insurance Company, which supports Silva Ferry Funeral Home and the families that we serve since 1990, and St. Anthony of Padua Credit Union, which is my favorite and most loyal bank right on Bedford Street in Fall River. So Peter Steffen is my guest today. He handled the remains of the deceased suspected Boston Marathon bomber, Tamerlan Tsarnaev. And Peter, when we went to the break, I was just about to ask you about your ideas on education reform for the people that are trying to enter the funeral industry. And I want, in our last segment, for you to kind of highlight some of those things. And I also want our listeners to know that Peter is coming back. I have Peter coming on next week and the week after. So there's plenty of time if you want to call in and ask him anything about the industry, about anything that he advocates for, and about his experiences when he handled the remains of the suspected Boston Marathon bomber. So, Peter, your thoughts on education reform.
Okay. Most of the people enrolling in mortuary school, mortuary college now, are young ladies, about 80%.
Yes.
And the problem is they can get into school, and they finish school.
Oh, did we lose you, Peter? Oh, it looks like we lost Peter for a second. So while we are calling him back, I'm just going to take a moment to remind everybody to check out the blog, which is www.thesilvalining.org. And that's where I'm going to summarize every single show, including this one. But every single show that I've ever done is summarized on that blog with references to everything that we've talked about. So that anything can be found and located, including the article that mentions everything that Peter advocates for and highlights everything that I've talked about today. I'm also going to put on there a great article that I found about other people that have murdered or hurt other people and have passed away and been buried in our country. I'm going to talk about them as well. And it looks like we're having some problems with the phone, so we're going to try to get Peter back on. But I'm going to put that article in as well, because it really kind of touches home about all these different other situations that other families have been through that have had the instance where their family member has hurt other people, like the Columbine, the two gentlemen that hurt everybody in Columbine and what their families went through when they had to bury those two guys. And I think one of them was cremated. But this article kind of pulls everything together really well and even mentions Peter. I also want to remind everybody that I am in Somerset every Tuesday from 1 to 3 p.m., and that is at 84 County Street in Somerset. And I will have treats with me from the wonderful Continent Bakery in Swansea. So I would really, really hope that at least a couple people would come and talk to me and help eat those treats, or I will eat them all myself. It's totally informal. I will be there from 1 to 3, and you're free to come and ask me anything that you'd ever want to ask a funeral director. There's no obligation. And it's a great time to have a conversation that you might not be so comfortable calling in on the radio show to talk about. That's what it's kind of there for. And you can check out the Somerset facility, which is actually the oldest funeral home in Somerset. And a lot of people don't know that. The only problem is that we cannot get Peter back on the phone for some reason. So we're not going to have him back at this end of the segment. But we will have him back next Thursday and the Thursday after. So I'm definitely going to be picking his brain about his education reform. Because what a lot of people don't know is there's like a gap. There's state rules that govern how apprenticeships work for funeral homes. So funeral homes, in their eyes, apprenticeships are a really hard thing to give out because they're so strictly, you know, ruled and governed by with the state. So when students go to enter school, they need at some point to get an apprenticeship for 2 years before they can even apply for their license. And everything is disconnected. So when most students go to a funeral home and say, I really want an apprentice, most funeral homes say, well, I don't want to commit to this big, huge commitment of giving you an apprentice because you don't have experience. But then the student says, well, I really want experience. And a lot of funeral homes won't just hire students to give them experience, to help them have experience on their resumes so that they can better promote themselves to get an apprentice, because they don't have an apprenticeship or experience. So there's this kind of missing loop. And at the funeral schools, they teach mostly programs that really, and as they should, gear them towards passing the board exams, which is what they need to get licensed and to be able to practice being a funeral director and an embalmer in the state they want to work in. So a lot of his ideas are really what I want to hear, because they have a better solution for restructuring, making it easier for students to enter the workforce, making it easier for funeral homes to allow these apprentices to happen, and making it better for the colleges to offer a connection for their students to have apprenticeships and to kind of connect the whole education program with the work experience, which honestly is the best way you can learn, is to be learning educationally while you're learning in the workforce. So next week's show will be really interesting, talking about education, and we also want to cover a little bit more about cemeteries and regulations, because if you really think about it, New England's the most affected. We have some of the oldest cemeteries in our country. We are the oldest states in our country. So please join us next week on The Silver Lining. And as always, thank you for listening.